Warning, the following program is designed for casual wrestling fans and is meant purely for entertainment. If you're SAWFT, proceed at your own risk. Viewer discretion is advised. Brother, I'm going on a wild Hulk Hogan. If I like get some moment, I'll make sure it's an explosion. Cause lately I've been seeing stars, trying to kick out on this choke horse. But it's no horse bar, middle finger like a stone cold. And what is up, ladies and gentlemen? It's your boy, We Too Deep. I am back with another episode of the Slapping Meat Wrestling Podcast. And we are on the road to Backlash. That'll be May the 10th in St. Louis, Missouri. We're going to discuss where I think the story's going. Y'all know how I fantasy book. You know, I know there are certain people in wrestling companies that say, you know, just stop fantasy booking, stop doing this, stop critiquing. No, we're wrestling fans. We deserve to have fun and to do that. That's what's fun about wrestling, right, is you could fantasy book it. And now there are some people who get upset and when their fantasy bookings don't happen, or they set themselves up for certain types of expectations, right? And when it doesn't happen, like, because some people really go into the fantasy world, right? But so we're going to talk about, like, what we've seen post-Mania so far, where do I think it's going to lead, and with the information we have. We're going to discuss, we're going to discuss three things with that, and where we're headed, because we didn't really get a lot of information Monday, so I do want to discuss Monday's episode. It's really what this is on the road to Backlash. What did I think of the Raw after Mania, right? And I have some stuff to say about Raw after Mania as a whole. We'll break down Dwayne's interview on Pat McAfee. I had to talk about it. I know it's been a few days, right? But you know I had to talk about it and break that down. I'll give a thought or two on this episode of Dynamite from Wednesday, a thought or two on NXT from Tuesday, and then we'll head into the react to that, where we got a two-parter of things that I want to react to with that. So let's dive in to that. Some of this that I say about Monday's episode of Raw may be a repeat from Tuesday. But again, I just want to sort of break that down a little bit more. We're not going to go match for match, right? So the first thing that we're going to talk about the ending of the show first. Bron Breakker is part of this new faction with Seth Rollins, right? And so we obviously wrestling fans are going to start comparing, because that's what we do, right? Oh, this is a new this. This is a new that. I've seen a lot of people say Dangerous Alliance because of the Paul Heyman element. I think this is Evolution 2.0, and there's a lot of people who've took to that on social media, and the question is, if that's what this is, who's the last member? If Paul Heyman is the Ric Flair manager type, and Seth Rollins is the Triple H, and we're assuming Bron Breakker's the Batista, right? Who's the Randy Orton? Right. Well, the first name that comes to mind, and I've said this over the week so far, is Austin Theory. Austin Theory is the one that makes the most sense. The young, promising superstar that needs a little guidance to get there. Right. You could do, you know, I've heard the name of like Ethan Page, but Ethan Page is in his 30s, you know. Lexus King is in his 30s. I don't think that would jive well with the dynamic of you got the, because if y'all know and understand what Evolution was, it was Triple H and Ric Flair taking two young hot up and comers under their wings to evolve the business, basically, right? And so if we're continuing with that, with Rollins and as the guy, the main focus of the group, the Triple H of the group, who's going to take two young up and comers under his wings, Bron Breakker makes a lot of sense. Austin Theory makes a lot of sense. He's still super young. I mean, I've heard the names of like, oh, well, maybe it's Fraxium. I don't think that works. I just personally, but also like Austin Theory has a kayfabe, like on screen in the lore history with Seth Rollins that they could play into. If you remember that, I'm pretty sure it was during the pandemic or right just after when the fans started to get back into the crowd, where it was the Monday Night Messiah and he had his disciple, Austin Theory, right? That's the only name that makes sense to me on the roster right now, unless they sign some new young guy, right? Or it's one of the Evolve guys, which I highly doubt that it will be. You know, Wavy D mentioned someone like a Charlie Dempsey. Maybe, I don't necessarily see it, but I think it was Wavy D who said Charlie Dempsey. Maybe, I don't know. I don't remember. I'll be honest. Let's pull you behind the curtain here. A lot of times, I don't remember what we talk about on Tuesdays. We just have the conversation. I don't rewatch the show, I'll be honest. So I don't remember a lot of what I say on a week-to-week basis. But yeah, Austin Theory makes the most sense to me, just personally. Had Ricky Starks not showed up in AEW or NXT, excuse me. I would never compare the greatest TV show to the worst. No, I'm kidding. It's not SmackDown. But yeah, if had Ricky Saints not showed up in NXT, I could have seen him debuting in this group. He is a little bit older though. But again, I don't know if age is a factor, right? But I also think, well, I can't think this anymore because I don't know if there was a plan ever. I just have a feeling Ethan Page, I don't know. We'll talk about The Rock, because what I was going to say was Ethan Page is still hooked up in The Rock and in the Cena Rock storyline in some way. But knowing what we heard on Pat McAfee's show with The Rock, which we'll talk about here in a few minutes, who knows if there's ever going to be any, right? So I got a lot to say to The Rock, and it's going to be directed towards The Rock, right? And I'm going to be calm, right? There's that. So there's Rollins, right? I think it has to be Austin Theory. That's the only name that makes sense to me. And we'll see where it probably won't be. We'll see where it leads. I'm interested in it. I said during in the casual wrestling Discord during Mania Night One, you know, we had that I felt that we were going to get a focus this year over the next 365 days on heels, and Seth Rollins is now a heel. Becky Lynch is now a heel. You have Cena as a heel champion. Jacob Fatu, while technically a heel at this point, I think he'll turn face. You know, Dominic's champion. He's part of a heel, but again, he got a big cheer. But it is the Mania crowd, so how do we balance that, right? So there is a focus right now on heels in WWE, which I like because I think you need to establish an overarching thing right now, right? Where, and it's sort of the thing that AEW tried to do with the Death Riders and the Elite, where like they were controlled by heels and they needed saving, but that sort of fell apart and didn't work well. And I think WWE is going to say, hey, now watch the big leagues run that type of storyline where you have the heels take over the show and hold it hostage. And so you need the good guys. You need the baby faces. You need the Jey Usos and the Cody Rhodes to come in. I have a really strong feeling Sami Zayn's going to turn heel at some point in the near future. You got Gunther, who's been a heel, but he's been more of a tweener, right? But now he's up here choking out Pat McAfee, right? And so, yeah, man, I think we're on a run that will be very heel-centric. Yeah. So there's that. Sorry, lost my train of thought for a minute. Speaking of heels, let's talk about this heel Cena gimmick, right? And this sort of starts the conversation with The Rock on McAfee, but it's not really going to be. Well, actually, we'll save that for a minute. Let's talk about the other heel segment here. Becky Lynch, heel turn. So, again, like I said on Tuesday, and I want to sort of flesh this out some more. I'm not upset that Becky Lynch turned heel. It's not that she turned on Lyra that I'm upset at. Again, it's the timing of when it happened. Right? WrestleMania is supposed to be the biggest show of the year. Right? It's supposed to be the biggest fights, the biggest matches, everything. Right? For the most part, WrestleMania. And this is why I don't know if I've said it on the podcast, so I won't say I'll go on. I've been on record saying this, but I'll go on the record now and say it. WrestleMania, and I know logistically this would be a nightmare to change at the moment. WrestleMania should be in December, right? Because it is the culmination of a year's worth of product, or it should be, right? And so WrestleMania, and you could leave it in April, that's fine. But what it's supposed to be is the ending of a lot of the majority of the stories you're telling going into it, right? WrestleMania should be a place where feuds end so that you could begin something fresh going into the SummerSlam season, right? And so it's like the grand finale of a movie, right? And so, and for the most part, we kind of accomplished that in a lot of places, right? You know, Jacob Fatu gets the title, which is going to create, it starts a new storyline, right? There wasn't really a story between Fatu and LA Knight to end, but that was a plot piece that starts the drive of Fatu versus Solo towards SummerSlam, right? That so WrestleMania should do, because wrestling never ends and there is no off season. You don't really end anything. You nothing ever fully ends. You're ending something and immediately beginning something new, right? It's that circular cycle, right? And so WrestleMania should end feuds and begin feuds, right? And there should always be. And every PLE or pay-per-view should have this mentality: is if we're ending a feud, we have to give a storyline that makes it. We're ending a feud, so let's say, for example, with we'll go to an AEW example because the first thing that came to my mind: Toni Storm versus Mariah May at what was that Revolution, the grand match that everyone says was so awesome that should have main evented. Yeah, right. There should have been at the end of that. So they ended that feud, right? And then Toni Storm comes in the next week and starts the new one, which is right. So Mania is supposed to be either a creation of a new story, a big moment that's a cliffhanger that extends a story, or it ends stories. And Mania should be the place where a lot of your booking over the last 365 days should end, right? And or you get a big moment like Cena and Cody that extends it for longer, right? But PLE should do one of two things: end feuds, start feuds, or extend. Give us a plot point to extend the feud, right? And I feel like a lot of times Triple H does it, Tony Khan does this. Every wrestling promotion, I feel, does it. They don't do a great job of doing that with every single story, right? Becky Lynch should have turned heel on January 6th, right? She should have come in, congratulated Lyra for winning the title, and then did exactly what she did on Monday and turned heel. She wouldn't have had to show up. I mean, you would have expected something. What I would have done was have Becky turn heel on January 6th, show up at the Royal Rumble, beat Lyra Valkyria. Becky Lynch doesn't show up for Elimination Chamber or the month leading up to it from Rumble. You get about, right, Lyra Valkyria every week is saying, Adam Pearce, I need my rematch. And he's like, well, I can't get a hold of Becky. I can't get a hold of Becky. She's avoiding me, right? And then Becky Lynch shows up, right? And Adam Pearce tells her, if you don't defend the title, I'm going to have to strip it from you, right? You've missed work. You've missed your obligations. You either defend the title at WrestleMania or I'm stripping you of the title. And she says, fine. She can have a rematch. And then Lyra Valkyria, and this is the, you know, you could do it differently. You could have it like where Becky doesn't show up the month leading up to Elimination Chamber. So Adam Pearce announces at Elimination Chamber, Becky Lynch needs to show up or she's going to be stripped of the title. You can have Becky show up, say, I'm not fighting tonight. All you said was I had to show up. And then in the month and a half from Chamber to Mania, just bully the hell out of Lyra, deny her a rematch, this, that, and the third. Promo battle, promo battle, promo battle. You set up a big match at Mania where Lyra Valkyria can then win the title back, beat Becky Lynch, get that prestige that the belt has from a name like Becky, right? And then you overcome Becky Lynch and you get that push, right? Because that's the thing that Lyra's missing right now, right? If you didn't watch her in NXT, you won't understand Lyra Valkyria, right? And so we have a lot of these casual fans who just know her as like, oh, she's the Raven girl or she's the weird girl, which I think is highly nonsensical. I don't think she's weird. I think people just don't understand the gimmick because they haven't really explained it, right? But I do enjoy, I enjoy Lyra Valkyria. I think Lyra Valkyria, does she give off a little bit of a weird vibe? Sure, right? But it's one of those like, she doesn't know how beautiful she is type. Like, you remember in high school, there was always that weird girl that, like, she wasn't in the popular crowd, but, like, the dudes still talked to her because she was absolutely attractive, but she didn't realize how attractive she was and the power that she had. Ladies, you got power. Y'all don't understand. But, right, that's sort of Lyra Valkyria to me, right? Some people see her as weird, but then there's, you know, I don't see her as weird at all. I find her in-ring ability to be top notch. She's top five in on the active roster right now in WWE. In-ring, her promo work is pretty good. I think people just see her, you know, her, the way she walks and her gimmick, which is all a gimmick, by the way. Like, so I don't understand why that is a critique, just personally, right? But anyway, right, so she turns heel, Becky Lynch does, right? She should have turned heel on January 6th, and we had 3 months to build towards WrestleMania with Becky Lynch. Again, you could even have Becky Lynch being like, hey, if you want to do this or I'll defend it against this, or, you know, find a way to build a story that isn't we're going to win the tag titles and then I'm going to turn on you the next day. I just felt that the timing of the heel turn, right, is bad. It wasn't the heel turn itself that I hated. I actually kind of saw it coming. So I'm a little bit upset with the timing of the heel turn. And the reports are that Becky Lynch wanted to wait, which is a reason that promoters should give very little creative control to wrestlers. Because they think they know best, and really, Becky Lynch should have showed up to work on January 6th and ran the story, right? So now we'll talk about heel Cena. Because if you remove the Rock element from heel Cena, right? This gimmick works, right? But part of me is thinking as we are approaching, the next thing we'll talk about will be the weigh-in on Pat McAfee. So we'll sort of combine these two little ideas together, right? If you waited for this heel turn, if you ultimately wanted to turn John Cena heel, waiting till WrestleMania would have been the better call, right? If you had Cena win Chamber and you set up a month and a half worth of promos of John Cena and Cody Rhodes talking about how, you know, Cody's promo side is, you know, his motivation is keeping the title. He spent 3 years chasing, and his family has spent generations chasing, and he finally got it, and he's not going to let it slip out of his hand. And then you have what I would call a tweener Cena, like normal Cena coming out saying it's my last year. This might be my last opportunity. Cody Rhodes, you better realize that I will do anything that it takes. I will go to hell and back. And cut a promo. I'm going to do anything it takes to win that title, right? And you have a face versus face. There seemingly is no bad guy, but you have two guys with motivation. This is what I've been saying, right? The problem with casual wrestling fans and with wrestling fans in general is we've been brainwashed to assume that we need to have the standard heel versus baby face. You need the good guy and the bad guy to tell the story. And I don't think, I think wrestling and stories and life in general, right? If we want this to be a little bit more realistic, which I'm not against having realism in storylines, right? But if we want it to be a little bit more realistic, right? Why wouldn't Cody Rhodes, babyface Cody Rhodes, have the motivation to keep his title, and the guy coming up against him is the good guy that everyone likes, John Cena? Why wouldn't Cody, you know, why wouldn't Cena and Cody fight in real? If the stipulation of Elimination Chamber, right? The stipulation itself clears the need to have the bad guy, right? But the motivation for Cena it's clear, right? If you had him as a babyface going into the match, his motivation is clear. He wants the record before he can retire, and he doesn't know if he'll get a chance again, right? He's willing to do anything. That should have been the story, right? And then he gets to the match. You don't have the Travis Scott thing, but you have a ref bump and maybe Cena recognizing this is his opportunity. Kicks Cody in the dick like he did. The ref gets up. You get an AA. You get a 1-2-3, and Cena turns heel at WrestleMania. And that's how we're going off the air. The conversation that podcasters and the internet have been having over the last 4 days would not be, well, WrestleMania is ruined because of the ending of Night 2. It would be, what an ending to Night 2, and we wouldn't be having this conversation, right? And so I think, again, timing is very important. But let's get to the Rock thing. Because first off, heel Cena works without the Rock element, right? If Cena would have turned heel at Mania to win the title, come in Raw after Mania, cut the same promo, I promised you 36 dates, I've run this from this moment on, you get nothing from me. No more. This, that, and the third. You get nothing from me. I'm an abusive. That promo stuff, all of that works without the Rock, right? What has been my number one complaint about heel Cena? I've said in the past it's failed, but that's solely because it was hitched to this Rock, I want your soul story. You remove it from I want your soul, it's actually really good. Right. And so it works without the. But here's the thing. You can't be mad at wrestling fans. You can't be mad at me. Can't be mad at the majority of wrestling fans. Can't be mad at Dave LaGreca. Can't be mad at any of the JD or Sala Monster or any of the people. Right. You can't be mad at them when we expect that The Rock should be at WrestleMania. And The Rock even said this on the interview, that sending Travis Scott out gave the expectation that The Rock would be there, right? And we'll talk about the interview in a second, because I got a lot a lot of things to say about it. But if you remove heel Cena out and unhitch it from the dead weight known as Dwayne The Rock Johnson in this I Want Your Soul story, and you unhitch it, heel Cena is going to work just fine, right? And so it's a great gimmick by itself. But it was hitched, and it started, and it was a part of, and all the breadcrumbs and everything that led up to the moment made it seem like he was working with The Rock. And that was what was intriguing about the gimmick, because you hitched it to it. But then you started to tell the story with this dead weight dragging it back, because everyone's looking and said, well, heel Cena's fine, but what about the dead weight behind it, right? So let's go ahead and just bring up the interview here. So Pat McAfee, Tuesday, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, right? And I don't watch Pat's show. I'll be honest, I'm not the biggest fan of Pat McAfee. I think he's fantastic at getting a crowd hype, and he does his job well. But his vibe is not my vibe, right? I don't get off on, like, if I tune in to watch a sports show, I just want you guys to talk about sports, and I don't want it to be like, oh, the bros hanging out. Like, I get the vibe you want, but it's not my vibe, right? First off, I don't really necessarily watch sports shows anymore. I don't necessarily care about sports that much to see what the insiders who tend to be wrong think about it, right? Right? But I'm not a big fan of, like, even with him on commentary, I think he does too much at times. He does too much that it takes away from moments. I'm just not, like, Pat McAfee's cool, right? But I just think, like, he's got this level of, and what I would say it's unprofessionality about him, where, you know, he's at the draft on his live stream, you know, hitting vape pen or weed pens. He's, you know, the whole big night out thing. I'm not a big fan of that. Like, none of that appeals to me as a sports fan or as a wrestling fan, right? I think for me, when I, especially with him on commentary, what I look for in a commentator, I look for someone who does their job, and their job is to tell stories. Pat McAfee doesn't add anything to a story when he's on commentary. Right? Your job, right? That's why I lean towards Joe Tessitore, right? There was a joke made by someone online that the second that so Pat McAfee got choked out on Monday, and they said the second that Joe Tessitore sat down, my ears calmed down and were at peace. And it's true, right? There's just something about Pat McAfee that gets me on edge. He does too much to me. And so when he left and you put Joe Tessitore on there, Tessitore is a much better commentator to me, right? That's just me, though. But anyway, so we go on the show. They introduce The Rock, and I don't watch the show very often. I just, again, first off, 3 hours of a sports show is all crazy. And they talk about a whole bunch of shit that I don't care. Right, guys, when it comes to sports, like, I'm super casual with sports. I watch football. I watch hockey. I watch NASCAR. That's it. I don't care about your baseball news. I don't care about your golf news. I don't care about all the drama going on with Shannon Sharp. I don't care about all of that. None of the, I don't want the tea. I don't want the gossip. I don't care about it. I just don't. And so I have zero reason to watch his show, right? Not saying that you shouldn't. I'm just saying I don't care about it, right? So I tuned into it solely with the intent of watching The Rock. So I didn't even know what time it was supposed to go on. Very little promotion of this. I do know it was on Raw for like a 30-second little advertisement, I believe, because that's where I think all of us saw it, and we're like, oh, so this motherfucker can show up on McAfee, but he can't show up at Mania type. I think that's what the reaction was when they announced it on Monday, right? So anyway, I tune into the show, and all I care about is the wrestling talk. From apparently, The Rock gave another 30 minutes after the wrestling talk, talking about every single brand, but the one brand that he should be talking on a sports show for, which is the UFL. That's the only brand The Rock doesn't promote, is the brand that's actively in season right now with the UFL. And he doesn't promote them at all. He promotes Terramana. He promotes his health skincare brand, Papa Dewey, or whatever the fuck it's called. He promotes all the movies he's getting ready to make. Promotes all of that stuff, right? And so from the jump, like, that's crazy to me that you don't promote your football league that's actively in season. The second thing, before we get into what The Rock said that I want to sit here, is I don't know if Pat was told not to, like, press. And this is what irritates me with these type of this is why I 100%. So my take on this was a PR scheme. This was PR cleanup. Because Pat McAfee just sat there and asked the softest questions. He pitched meatballs right down the middle of the plate for The Rock to be able to hit out of the park to try to clean up this mess. And I'll tell you something, like, if this show ever goes big, if Slapping Me Wrestling ever goes big, and I have someone like Dwayne The Rock Johnson trying to do PR on my guys, I'm asking the tough questions, right? That's the thing with Pat, is Pat is a yes man. You got right? Pat is a yes man. He is, right? Hey, Pat, this is how I envision this happened on Sunday night. Ari Emanuel picks up the phone, or Nick Khan's at the arena with Pat, and they're just got done with the roast, or they're on the way to the roast of whatever, right? And Nick Khan walks up, or Ari gets on the phone. I don't know if Ari was there or not, but let's say he was. And they go to Pat and say, Pat, we need cleanup. We're getting shit on online with this. People aren't liking the ending. We need to do cleanup. Do you think Dwayne could show up on Tuesday and take care of this? And we need you to, we'll give you the questions to ask. We'll PR this, and we'll try to clean it up. Right. That's what could have happened. But I also think there was ulterior motives from Dwayne. I think this could have been Pat gets a text from Dwayne saying, hey, I got to clean up my image because I'm the one taking the heat right now. So I'm going to come on and explain it. And Pat McAfee, being the guy he is, knowing the type of ratings that The Rock would pop on his show, because there are a lot of wrestling fans who wouldn't have tuned into his show, that if he said The Rock was going to be there, all the wrestling fans would tune into it. And the sports fans were going to, if you watch the live stream on YouTube of this interview that went on for like 45 minutes, the wrestling fan or the guys who watch the show for the sports talk were just begging Pat to move on to the next topic and get The Rock off the screen. Because they were begging, they watched for sports talk, and they got this man Rock talking about Papa Dewey's or whatever the hell that skincare thing is called, Terramana, his movies, and they want sports talk, right? And it's crazy, right? So anyway, let's talk about what Dwayne gave us. Outside of the fact that Pat McAfee didn't ask any hard questions, he didn't push back on the bullshit, he just sat there and took it like the paid stooge that I think he was, just to say that, right? Not saying anything bad about Pat. I think I think this was 100%. Pat, you got to run this. We got to do cleanup. You can't ask hard questions. You can't follow up. Just let The Rock say his piece and you know, ask about his movies, ask about his other brands, but we can't push on why he wasn't at Mania. You know, you could ask the question and let The Rock give an answer. And then once The Rock gives an answer, don't push back on it. Because you know me, I would have pushed back on the answer because I can detect bullshit from a mile away, right? So listen to this. I was in a constant state of rolling my eyes. I think eventually they got stuck in the back of my head. Because the first thing that The Rock says, the first thing Dwayne, I'm not calling him The Rock no more, Dwayne, the first thing Dwayne says is, you know, I'm speaking as DJ Dwayne Johnson, the chairman of the board, which again, right? He segments and I know there's going to be so many people that are, okay, Fabe's dead. Why are we getting so upset that The Rock shows up and doesn't? Because guys, I don't pay to see The Rock as Dwayne Johnson. I pay to see The Rock, the gimmick. And if his gimmick at the current moment is the final boss and he's a bad guy, he needs to be a bad guy, right? You look at John Cena, how he is in outside of the meet and greets, which I still wished he would have just been stoic, never moved, never said anything, no handshake, no smile. That would have been right with the title one. That would have been a great, or imagine, like, you know, so he's been doing this thing where, like, he wears the title backwards and he doesn't show his face. So, like, you saw the picture, like the point picture with Triple H and Cena, where Cena was facing backwards and it was the back of his head with the title on backwards. That should have been the meet and greet photo, right? That should, that, imagine that that photo would sell. So that's a moment. As a wrestling fan, that's the type of photo that I want. I don't care about two fucks about meeting John Cena. If I got a picture with John Cena as a heel for the first time in 20 years, bro, that's a crazy photo. That's a memory, right? It's like people who pay to go see MJF. They don't want nice guy MJF. They want MJF to rip them a new one, throw their toy across the hallway, sign it, and then tell you to go fuck yourself. That's what you pay for the, again, it's about the experience. Wrestling should never just be about, like, oh, I want to meet, obviously you guys have your favorite wrestler, right? Like Dolph Ziggler was mine, right? And I've met him twice. Cool dude, right? Great experience. He was a baby face both times I met him, right? So handshakes, all that, that's cool. He's a personal guy. Enjoyed him, right? But at the same time, my greatest memory that I had meeting a wrestler was when I met Jake the Snake. And Jake the Snake was a heel, right? Now, I never watched Jake the Snake. That was a generation before me, right? But I know of Jake the Snake. I like Jake the Snake. It was at a comedy show that he was doing. And he obviously he's Jake the Snake. He's playing the gimmick, right? So I go up and shake his hand, you know, hand the person who's taking the pictures my phone to get the picture. And, you know, and he could have just been normal, you know, normal like fist or point or something like that, like most wrestlers do. But no, he's Jake the Snake. He's going to play the gimmick. He gives me the bird to the camera. And that's one of the greatest pictures that I have meeting a wrestler, right? So one of the greatest moments I've ever had meeting a wrestler was that, because it's an experience, right? I don't want to meet the guy behind the character. I want to meet the character, right? So first thing that he comes on that right there is he says, well, I got a call about a month or so before Elimination Chamber, and it was from Ari, and he's like, man, the ticket sales are soft, which I'm going to tell you right now is a crock of bullshit. Here's how I know. So a month before Chamber would have been Royal Rumble. So at some point around the Royal Rumble, he would have said, Ari Emanuel called me and told me ticket sales are soft. Well, that's a crock of bullshit, and I'm going to tell you why. Because on January the 20th of this year, so this was before Royal Rumble, you had about 8-9 days before the Royal Rumble, right? On January the 20th, you had, this is from WrestleTix. Where they get their data from, I don't know, but it's official data. He has contacts with Ticketmaster that can confirm these numbers. You had a current setup, or you had a setup on January 20th of 30,442 seats. 30,442 seats on January the 20th that were set up for tickets distributed on January 20th. By the way, with just John Cena's name selling the tickets, nothing else has been promoted for this event but John Cena. Tickets distributed 26,168, meaning there's 4,270 tickets remaining. With 40 days out from the show, 40 days out from the show, you had 86% of the tickets sold. Ticket sales were not soft, big guy. Try a different lie. So what we end up having is, so a month later, February 24th, I got receipts here, right? A month later, February 24th, WrestleTix posts another update. Now, he does this every week, but this was the I wanted to see about a month later. So this would have been 5 days out from the show. They add about 2,000 seats more available, meaning ticket sales are doing well, that they figure that they could open more. And there's 29,000. So there's 32,000 available seats. There's about 30,000 tickets distributed, about 2,000 tickets left. 5 days before, right? Now, this was 3 days after The Rock showed up and said, "I want your soul." He showed up that, what was it, the 21st, which would have been a Friday, right? He showed up that Friday on SmackDown, says, "Cody Rhodes, I want your soul," 3 days later. So that would have been that Monday. And they sold an extra 2,200 seats for The Rock, right? The day of the event, ticket sales must be doing really well. The day of the event, they add another 5,000 seats available, and they end up getting 36,000 tickets sold on the day of the event. They've opened Upper Deck. Again, this is what was going to happen in the first place, because there's 2 points I want to make about why ticket sales may have been, in his words, soft. Wasn't that The Rock wasn't there. It was, you charge a fucking arm and a leg to go to these events now. But secondly, most people, like myself, when I go to Monday Night Raws, I don't buy tickets till either the weekend before or the day of the event, trying to get the cheapest ticket possible. Most people wait last minute, especially when they don't know what the card is for a PLE, right? If you call a month before the I Want Your Soul gimmick was started, right? And that storyline was started. If you call a month before that, obviously you're 40 days out from the event. Obviously, ticket sales aren't going to be where you wanted them to be. But at the time, you had 85% of your, you had almost 27,000 tickets sold solely with the name John Cena. Stop acting like The Rock sold tickets. If anything, and we can't just put this on The Rock, from January 20th to the night of the event, there were an extra 10,000 tickets sold. And I bet a lot of it had zero to do with The Rock. I bet a lot of it had zero to do with The Rock. Because I'm willing to bet a lot of it was about The Rock, because that was an interesting gimmick that you started. But let's stop the bullshit that Ari Emanuel called you because ticket sales were soft. You had 85% of your available tickets sold 40 days before the event. Right? This was obvious. This was a cleanup from Dwayne, and it may have been Dwayne cleaning up his own image. He goes on there. He says, I didn't want to overshadow. We paused the I Want Your Soul gimmick because I didn't want to overshadow John Cena's moment. And here's my problem with that. Here's my problem with this. This entire story is predicated and revolves. It's hinged upon. I can use as many synonyms as you want me to say. It's entirely hinged upon The Rock being there on the show of shows to get the payoff. So I did this on Tuesday in my solo episode on Tuesday. But I'm going to go back and do this. What was the point of Bad Blood? What was the point of January 6th? What was the point of January 7th on NXT? What was the point of I Want Your Soul? If none of that had any purpose or any plan, right? Because he essentially, what The Rock admitted was, well, there was no plan. going into this that I just got a call and they want it, right? Ari Emanuel didn't say you needed to be involved with Cody Rhodes. He just said, can you show up? Let's take him at his word and say, well, he said, can the final boss show up? The final boss could have showed up at Elimination Chamber, cut a promo, did a people's elbow or a rock bottom to some poor mid-carder like JD McDonough or something, right? And then left. And that would have been enough to justify the final boss being there. Didn't have to bake himself into one of the most important storylines going on at the moment. But no. The Rock had a better idea. I want your soul, Cody Rhodes. And so there's... I'm not saying anything new. I'm a little bit late to this party because people like Solomonster and JD have already sort of hashed this out. This feels like Dwayne wants to go back to being loved by the fans. He wants to be a good guy. And in order to do that, he needs Cody Rhodes to turn heel. And that's why I think he's so pressed on turning Cody Rhodes heel. It's so that he can go. And I think what he wanted to do was his original plan was have Cody Rhodes turn heel. Have Cody Rhodes turn heel so Dwayne could go babyface and take the title off of him. I think that's what he wanted. I do think Cody Rhodes has a very good heel run in him, but now's not the time. I think you can wait 3 or 4 years for a heel Cody Rhodes. He puts this Cena heel arc on Triple H, which I think is a decent arc. Like I just said, if you unhitch it from I Want Your Soul, Dwayne Johnson, it's a good gimmick. It really is. So he says, you know, we did this thing at Chamber, and then I step back and say, you know what, I don't want to overshadow Cena, right? Which makes sense of now why nothing was ever mentioned of The Rock, because there was no plan here, right? Everyone who told me, be patient, there's a plan. Be patient, there's a plan. Stop complaining about John Cena's gimmick and him not mentioning The Rock. That was my critique, right? He's never mentioned The Rock. Well, it's because he wasn't supposed to, because there was no plan, right? So all of this came together a month before your biggest show of the year. This is just bad creative, which, again, I don't think this is a conspiracy theory. There is tension backstage between The Rock. There is tension backstage between The Rock and Triple H. And Triple H is going to come out on the losing side for one reason and one reason alone. The owner of the company, Ari Emanuel, is The Rock's best friend. And The Rock damn sure makes sure that he tells everyone that we've been friends for 20 years. The Rock will win this. And at some point, it's when the ratings start going down and ticket sales start going down and not enough money, not enough advertisers, the second it starts to peak, you're booming now. But you don't always go up. Eventually in business, your numbers start to peak. And the second that happens, you can bet your ass Triple H is going to be canned. And The Rock is going to be there to play politician, and he's going to facilitate this. And The Rock is going to step in with him and Gewirtz and all of them, and he's going to have his team of yes men, just like Vince McMahon did. And he's going to think that he's doing a good job with creative. And if what we got with I Want Your Soul, if that was The Rock, and if that was his idea, I don't want him anywhere near the creative process. I don't want him anywhere near the creative process. So I think what we're seeing right now is a game of politics that is now stepping towards the forefront. This is typically without the social media. This is what would have happened behind the scenes with like a Hulk Hogan and a Kevin Nash, right? But what we're seeing now is a game of politics at the forefront of wrestling between Triple H and The Rock. And what I think happened was The Rock is setting up Triple H to have him take the heat. That's what this PR cleanup was. It wasn't really a WWE cleanup. This was, we're cleaning up The Rock's image because The Rock is taking the heat for this. And we're not going to blame The Rock. We're going to blame Triple H. Triple H made the call to turn Cena heel. My idea was to turn Cody heel. And right, it could have been Cody being my champion. And then I would have showed up. Now. Right? Triple H said no, and he made Cena heel, which was actually the better idea, by the way. Because you could turn Cena heel for 27 more shows, and he's gone at the end of the year, so I don't have to worry about it. And I think that's why Triple H gave the idea, and I like it. It's a good idea. You can have one final year with John Cena as a bad guy, right? But what I think is also happening is that Triple H gets told, who knows how long before the event, that The Rock won't be there. It may have been day of. Maybe he was fully expecting The Rock to be there, and The Rock never showed or called late or what. Who knows, right? I think Triple H is smart enough to know that the ending of that match, the ending of Mania, didn't need Travis Scott. But I think he was smart enough to know that if he sent out Travis Scott, every fan watching in the arena and online on Peacock or Netflix, if you're watching in a foreign country outside of the U.S., that every person watching the show, if Travis Scott walked out, would be expecting The Rock. And so I think what Triple H did was sent Travis Scott out anyway so that The Rock could take the heat. And we're watching a game of chicken right now. Who's going to budge first? That's what I think is happening. 100%. I think we're watching the politics behind the curtain step into the screen. And I think Triple H has contingency plans. I think he understands what he's doing. I'm not the biggest Triple H supporter. I think some of his booking has been bad. But this has brought a new light, some new information to me in my mind of, well, what if a lot of his booking, especially around Cody Rhodes, because that's where I've complained a lot, what if all of that is because The Rock is sabotaging that storyline? And so I fully don't know if I could fully blame Triple H. Obviously, he gets final say of what goes on TV. And this story is not the only story that has been mid for this entire build. Triple H still... I'm not taking back anything I said about you about the build towards Mania, especially for the mid card, because that was not good. But with this story in particular, I don't know if, again, I'm 100% putting the blame on The Rock. I am. I think he's trying to intentionally get Triple H out of the company so that he can insert himself and his creative yes men team around him, because they think they can tell better stories. And I'm sorry, it's just not going to happen. I don't know, man. I think within the next, I'm not going to be surprised if it happens this year, but I do think by the end of 2026, Triple H, when the numbers start going down, Triple H is out. So that's the story that everyone is now should be invested into is, man, if these numbers start going down, if quarter... What are we in? We're in quarter two of the year. If quarter two sales start dipping, or if we get into like quarter four where everyone tries to maximize profit at the end of the year, if quarter four sales, well, really they try to maximize profit at the end of quarter three because that's like the end of the financial year in October, right? It wouldn't surprise me if in October, if the numbers are looking bad, worse than last year, that The Rock steps onto the scene and says, we got to get Trips out of here, right? I think The Rock is personally mad that he didn't get his match with Roman at 40, that he took off time and dedicated himself to be committed to WWE for WrestleMania 40, and he didn't get the match with Roman that he wanted. And I think he's personally mad. And he's now gonna take it out. I do that. It may be a conspiracy theory, but I promise you, within the next 2 years, I think Triple H will be ousted as head of creative. I don't know if he'll be fired from the company, but I do think he will be ousted of being head of creative. I think Dwayne and Brian Gewirtz will be the head content people at some point in the next 2 years. So that's where I stand on that. Does Dwayne think we're dumb? That's the last. This is where I'll end this on. Like, does Dwayne think we're dumb? Again, you gave us breadcrumbs at Bad Blood. You gave us breadcrumbs on Netflix debut. The next night on NXT, you really didn't give us much. because you were drunk out of your mind, right? And you remember that promo. That promo did not age very well because he says, you know, I'm 20 steps ahead. Just enjoy the ride The Rock is taking you on. And in the homage of one of my favorite movies, Talladega Nights, this is what The Rock says to the fans complaining about him saying that. He says, well, hell, y'all, I was drunk when I said that. Shout out to Talladega Nights. Well, Ricky, I was high when I said that. Anyway. Man. But does he think we're dumb? With all these breadcrumbs you showed out and you didn't expect us to want you, Dwayne, and that we weren't going to give you heat for not being there at the show of shows to give us the payoff. I'm at the point, if Dwayne's not committed, you can't put your toes in the pool, or you can't just put your feet in the pool and sit on the outside, have your feet in and the rest of you out. If you're in, you're in. Get in the pool. If you don't want to be in the pool, get the fuck out. We don't need you here. We don't need Dwayne. Dwayne adds zero to the show. Dwayne adds zero to the show. And I'm going to say something here before we move on to the final two things or three things. I always call out people like my brother, Junkyard James, who I feel dick ride Tony Khan and glaze Tony Khan, you know, the type of people like Junkyard James, who anytime something bad happens in the company, a bad ending, take the Young Bucks showing up at Dynasty. They take that and say, they always try to justify and turn it into a good thing. They can't ever critique the bad creative, right? And James will sit here and be like, oh, we've called Tony Khan. Yeah, yeah. But when the really bad moments happen where like even AEW fans are complaining about it, there's a super hardcore faction of Tony Khan nut guzzlers that just glaze Tony Khan and can't find any fault. Like James is over here. Tony Khan's the savior of wrestling, right? WWE, I'm noticing, has people who are doing the same right now for The Rock, who are trying to rationalize, well, that's the story. That's just the story. Be patient, guys. No. We've been patient. This is really a story a year in the making with Dwayne and Cody that gets put off with I Want Your Soul. Now he steps back. We get all these breadcrumbs over the last 365 days. There's no payoff. How much more patient do you need me to be? We were supposed to get a payoff at this match. And instead, what we get is John Cena winning 17 with an assist from Travis Scott. That might go down as one of the worst endings to any WrestleMania or any event in general, right? We started the night with what I called the best WrestleMania opener of all time, maybe second if you like Bret versus Owen in WrestleMania 10. Like I said on Tuesday, I didn't watch the match live. I wasn't there for the build. I think for me, the women's triple threat to start night two was the greatest WrestleMania opener of all time, the best women's wrestling match in all WWE history. We started the night on such a high, and you end the night with what could possibly be in the top five worst finishes of all time. There's been some bad, shitty finishes. WrestleMania 9. We're now WrestleMania 41. There's been some crazy finishes that have been pretty bad. And so I'm not willing to say the best or the worst finish, but it's one of the worst finishes of all time. And that's the record book. That's how Cena gets 17. That's how we celebrate, right? That's crazy. I think we're watching politics, y'all. I think this is politics from Dwayne and from Triple H. I think they're butting heads backstage. Who's going to prevail? I hope it's Triple H because I don't want The Rock anywhere near creative in WWE. And if Triple H gets ousted from this company and The Rock, Dwayne gets put in and he puts Brian Gewirtz in, I'm not going to be the guy that's over extreme and say I'm never going to watch WWE again because that's not going to happen. I'll still watch as long as the show is good. But I would love if Triple H, because what I feel is, I think TKO, I think Endeavor wants any last remnant of the McMahons out of the company so that they can make it their own. And the last two members in their way are Stephanie and Triple H. And I really hope, and this is really stretching, I get it. There's been rumors of Vince trying to start a new up-and-coming company, and I really hope that that's true. And if Triple H gets ousted from this company, if Stephanie gets ousted from WWE, I hope Vince McMahon and Shane McMahon and Stephanie and Triple H all form a company. I will support that 100%. And they come straight after WWE. I hope they partner with AEW to come and do whatever it takes to take down WWE at that point. Because that's crazy. Dwayne can go away. Go back to Hollyweird, right? There's some weird stuff happening in Hollywood. That's why I call it Hollyweird. That's why I don't like Travis Scott. That's why there's a lot of Illuminati bullshit going on. It feels like I ain't got time for all of that. Yeah, when this company sold to Endeavor, though, I knew this was coming. I knew this was coming because Endeavor doesn't care about the wrestling. They don't. And this is what's going to happen. There was a video that I watched. I wish I still had a link to it that basically said the TKO Endeavor is essentially going to push bad product, overprice tickets, piss off the fans eventually. And eventually what that's going to mean is the company's going to die. They're in a cycle right now where they're booming. That boom's going to come to an end pretty damn soon. I 100% believe that. I just do the. Does The Rock think we're dumb? This entire story revolves around you, Dwayne. And everything in that interview with Pat McAfee was PR cleanup. Rather to put the blame on Triple H or. Which is what I think it is, but more so to take the blame off The Rock. Because The Rock is all about his image. And that's what I think it is, 100%. All of it is bullshit, and you can't convince me any other way. Let's talk about Dynamite. I didn't really watch the show. I will say this. It was boring as fuck what I did watch. You would think that a company known as AEW, coming off of WrestleMania weekend, coming off of the ending of WrestleMania, that you would come in and put on your best show ever. And they put on a very mid show. You know, I told you when the Young Bucks showed up that there's one person who could kill there's one act in AEW that could kill ratings quicker than Jon Moxley, and it was the Young Bucks. And I was correct. I was correct in that assessment. Their first match back in AEW, big promotion here. Speedball Bailey, Ricochet, I believe were the two that they. No, it was Speedball and Kevin Knight. I don't know who it was. I think it was Speedball and Kevin Knight. Speedball and Kevin Knight versus the greatest tag team, apparently to AEW fans, the greatest tag team in the world. And the Young Bucks return, and Dynamite draws the lowest viewership rating of the year. Like I said, the Young Bucks are literal ratings cancer to the product. And I'm justified. That's all I got to say. That's all I got to say about it. The show was boring. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was boring. You had a main event with Jamie Hayter versus Chris Statlander, which was a decent match. Jamie Hayter is now going to face Mercedes Moné in Phoenix at Double or Nothing, where we know Mercedes Moné will beat her, as Mercedes Moné will win herself another title against Toni Storm. At All In, and then have all the belts, never lose anything. I don't know. This is just stupid to me. I'm tired of Mercedes. I'm tired of all of these people. The show wasn't good. Ain't much more to talk about. NXT. I'm gonna be honest. NXT is good. I love NXT. But for a post Double or Nothing, as we're heading towards Battleground, I believe is what it's called in a month in Tampa, where you have Battleground going up against Double or Nothing. I know you got a month to build things, but just like my thoughts on Raw after Mania, you don't have enough time to sit here and not begin new stories. And I just feel like what we got on NXT was a lot of it was matches for the sake of matches. So I record NXT because we're doing the podcast on Tuesday. So I watch on Fridays before I get on the mic, and I fast forward it through a lot of the wrestling because I just don't care. I don't care about the matches. I want the story, right? So anytime there's a promo, I watch. But if there's a match that I don't like, I watch Stephanie versus Roxanne because why the fuck would I miss it? Vacare's match. I love Vacare. I love Roxanne. I think the women's division in NXT is the greatest place on earth. But I just don't see any feuds being built towards Battleground. And that's what I really want. I want the continuation of story, and we're getting basically just simple promo. My favorite part of the whole night was the cinematic stuff with the D'Angelo family. And I wish we did more of that on the main roster. Right? That's the type of stuff that I wish we went more cinematic in wrestling. And that D'Angelo family stuff, that's drama right there. That's what gets you hooked to the show, to make you want to watch Stax versus Tony D will happen at Battleground, I'm assuming. And boy, I wish I could be there. Boy, I wish I could be there. If you're in Tampa, boy, I wish I could be there. But that's NXT. So let's go to react to that. We'll end this real quick. Let's talk about WWE Unreal. A lot of people are complaining about it. I didn't watch the full trailer. I don't have to. I know the gist of the show. They're taking us behind the scenes of the creative process. And I'm actually going to join the IWC in complaining about this. Not because, so there's a lot of them that are like, well, kayfabe, you're killing kayfabe. Kayfabe's dead. But this is like tap dancing on the grave of kayfabe, right? I'm going to agree with, I don't remember who I heard say it this way, but I know the product is a work. I've even said on the show that it's essentially just fake fighting, right? We all know that. But WWE seems to be doing everything possible to put in our face that the product that we're watching is fabricated. Right? They want the reality stuff, right? Because that's what draws people. I hope the show flops. I do. Because this, to me, is crossing the line of, well, first off, who actually cares about what's going to be shown on this TV show, right? I don't care about what happens on the... Will I watch the show? Maybe. I'll try the first episode. But I deeply don't care about the creative... Like, it's the same reason I just complained about Dwayne going on McAfee and basically exposing the whole business is... I don't care. I want to believe in the match. The whole thing of wrestling is... You're supposed to suspend your belief, right? Or suspend your disbelief. You're supposed to believe that what you're watching is reality, even though you know it's not. And what WWE continually tries to do is end that magic. I couldn't even imagine being a kid in this generation, trying to grow up and being constantly told that what you're watching is not real. There was just a magic about being a kid thinking that The Undertaker and Kane were brothers. And there was a magical superhero named the Hurricane who ran around with his SHIT superhero in training, Rosie, right? There was just a magic of believing in that and that Stone Cold was a superhero to me, maybe not to everyone, but right. And you remember when that got exposed to you as well? No, that's not true. I remember the day that I found out that Kane and Undertaker weren't brothers. In reality, that changed perspective, right? It didn't really affect me, right? But, right, I can't imagine growing up in this generation and not being able to have the same magic. And even now, as I watch the show, I want to watch for the entertainment that's on the screen. I want to watch because there's a magic, right? There, right? Let's go back to the D'Angelo stuff I was just talking about, right? There's a magic in believing that Tony D'Angelo is a mob boss and his underboss just turned on him and now we're gonna have a mafia war. And that's just crazy, man. Like to then be told, like, I know that's not true, but there's just a magic in watching the television show and believing in that. Right. There's a magic in believing that Obafemi is a Nigerian giant who's just a beast and I don't want to get in the ring with him. Right. And then to have a show go behind the curtain, show the production of how this runs and expose fans to a side of the business I don't think should be exposed to, right? There's just, I don't care about the politics. It's the same thing I said to start the show. Like, I don't care about the drama of what goes on backstage. I think it's all childish. The politicking that The Rock is doing and what Triple H may even be doing, I think it's all childish, but that's the business, but I don't want to see it exposed. I have zero interest in this show. I don't. So I think some of the reaction to it, oh, it's killing kayfabe, is a little bit extreme. I don't think it's all that bad. Kayfabe's dead for the most part. I do think this takes it a step too far in exposing the business, right? I don't think the show needs to be made. But I don't think it's an overreaction for a wrestling fan to say that. Some of us still want to believe in the magic of wrestling, right? Last thing we'll talk about is there's a tweet from a person that I follow. Her name's Alice. I'm not gonna give all her ads and stuff like that. You can go find that yourself if you want to. But she tweets Triple H's NXT worldwide expansion will fail. TKO won't want to spend a ton of money on a network of indies that make $0. All of this WWE garbage, ID garbage will fizzle out too. Here's my reaction to that. First off, adamantly wrong. And I'll stand on that business. It's adamantly wrong. And let me tell you why it's adamantly wrong. Triple H's global expansion plan here, right? Getting Triple R, getting TNA, which I guess we could say it's Canada, but, you know, getting Triple A or TNA, getting Triple R or Triple A, Noah, you know, the partnership with Pro Wrestling Noah in Japan, whatever he's going to do in the UK and all across the world, you know, if it's NXT Africa, NXT India, whatever it is, right? All of this is about building a talent pipeline that's worldwide, expands the brand reach, and it future-proofs the success of WWE, not just from a talent perspective, but from a loyal fan base perspective. If you could build loyalty within your fan base, they will watch forever, right? TKO sees this long-term. There's a value in this long-term. I thoroughly believe this. I thoroughly believe Triple H and Shawn Michaels have convinced TKO and Endeavor on NXT being the quintessential developmental program to get the future stars of the company. I think TKO sees this as a long-term value while not being a short-term moneymaker. It's the foundation of the development. So I'll always say this: the future is the foundation of the company, right? You have to future-proof, and that's what this is, right? So the response that I got back from her was, I get it, but I don't see much value in it. A worldwide pipeline isn't necessary and doesn't create much value, which I, again, disagree with. So I said to her, well, NXT UK gave us Gunther Rhea, among others, Dragunov, right? This is just that, but at a global scale. WWID has already found solid future talents like Zeta Steel, Swipe Right, Jackson Drake, Kendall Gray, right? Even though she's not ID, but like Swipe Right, Zeta, I think Cappuccino Jones will be good. Jackson Drake will be good. In the same way that NIL has found Oba and Kalani and Tank Ledger, I think they both, right? Development and future-proofing your roster is definitely necessary for long-term success. This is, right? In her response, I'm be honest with you, not the best response. Well, they could have hired Gunther and Rhea at any time. Right? You just hire talent whenever you want them, basically, right? But here's my problem, right? Let's use Rhea as, because Rhea is the perfect example for this, right? Rhea signed with WWE in 2017 after 3.5-ish years of wrestling experience, right? She was known by virtually no one outside of Australia. Did anybody know a wrestler named Demi Bennett unless you lived in Australia? No, but she signs. She becomes Rhea Ripley. She joins the Mae Young Classic, loses her first, or no, she wins the first match, I believe, and then loses to Dakota Kai in the second round. I believe that's how it went, right? But she was a future star. She goes to NXT UK, dominates that, comes over to actual regular NXT, dominates that, goes to the main roster, and is now arguably one of the top three best women's wrestlers active today. If you would have just hired... Right? Does Rhea Ripley or Demi Bennett, her indie name, does she become the level of talent that she is without the developmental system known as NXT? No, she doesn't. So you sign her so you can develop her to become what she is today. Because what people look at today is the Rhea Ripley. But what they don't look at is the fact that she's had to go through years of developmental before she got to where she's at. Same thing with Gunther. Same thing with Dragunov, right? This system is meant to develop talent to the WWE style. But I also added to this. It's also, again, it's not about the talent, though. It's about creating a global footprint and loyalty with the locals. It's not just about talent. It's about territory. Someone responded with, this feels like hoarding talent more than anything. It's a great system to transition athletes to wrestlers globally, but the indies exist for... But here's the problem. Here's the problem that everyone... Because James responded similar to this, and this is what I want to bring in. James's response is, you know, Junkyard James, you know, says the issue is that Zeta and Gunther and Rhea all cut their teeth in local indie promotions for years before being noticed. First off, maybe Gunther, maybe Rhea, sure. But Rhea had 3 years of experience in the Aussie scene, which isn't big, by the way. And Gunther was running Europe, which is a little bit bigger. But Zeta Steel's only wrestled for 2 years. Rhea, when she signed with WWE, had only been wrestling for 3 years. I don't know about Gunther. I didn't look that deep into Gunther. The problem with this, right, he says the global expansion creates opportunities for the next generation to cut their teeth, or creates less, excuse me. This global expansion creates less opportunities for the next generation to cut their teeth and pay their dues. If the PC program worked like it was intended, they wouldn't have gone this route. Again, absolutely, adamantly false. Going back to this other person who says this feels like it's hoarding talent, the indies exist for the same reason. Here's the problem with that. Everyone loves to... Um, what's the word I'm looking for? Everyone loves to romanticize. That's what I was looking for. Everyone, you know, it's a romantic view of the Indies, right? Yes, Gunther and Rhea did come from their local scenes, but WWE didn't create that. NXT global expansion, NXT worldwide, whatever you want to call it, right? With that system, the system that WWE is now creating, WWE can shape the system while still allowing talent to grow through other repetitions, right? So you can have a WWE ID system where you say, hey, we like Zeta Steele. She's been wrestling for 2 years. We like what we've seen. She's young. She's hungry. She's right. We're going to go put her in touch with the best training. We're going to put her in touch with the best trainers. We're going to put her in touch with the best training schools and the best wrestling promotions. And we're going to get her on GCW to get reps. And we're going to get her on Future Stars Wrestling and ID tournaments. And she's going to wrestle and evolve. And we're going to and we're going to pump money and resources and opportunity into her while still training her to work our system so that in 2 years, 3 years, whatever time, maybe a year time, when she's fully developed to what we think, we could put her on NXT and know she's ready, right? All this system is doing is pumping money into promotions that already exist. It's pumping money and resources to give people opportunity. Y'all, IWC people, as much as I support, I love indie wrestling. I think you need to support indie wrestling. The indies are the future of the business. And I think the best way to support them is to love the fact that WWE is willing to put time, money, energy, and resources into the indies. Whereas Tony Khan's doing the complete opposite. 100%. He's taking talent from New Japan. He's taking talent from the indie scene. And he's giving nothing back to it. WWE is saying, here's what we're going to do. We're going to buy or acquire. I don't know if it's a full purchase or what. We're going to acquire, in, as part of TKO, AAA. I don't think nothing changes in the creative process of AAA. Here's what I think happens. They pump a shit ton of money into it to go in, so that they can compete with CMLL. And so that they can sign the best luchadors. And I think you send Rey Mysterio and Andrade and the Garzas and LWO and Zelina and all of these people, you can send them there. You can run World's Collide event with NXT like they're doing. And you can pump money, time, resources. What is his name? Oh, Vikingo and another person sort of sided with me, Laredo Kid, that's his name. Imagine like a Javon Evans versus Laredo Kid. Laredo Kid's probably the biggest name in AAA that I know of outside of Alberto and Vikingo. But Laredo Kid's crazy good, right? Imagine that. Imagine American Made versus the Psycho Clowns, right? Just a crazy amount of talent, right? So this other person comes in and agrees. He says, it's not even just the NXT concept, but it's the manifest destiny to have the most loaded roster of talent. Like, imagine a AAA card with its current stars, but American Made or Javon Evans are put in as attractions. You maximize your talent. 100%. 100%. This is the I think what the acquisition of AAA is exactly what the partnership with Noah is, more so the partnership of TNA. We'll send you Fatal Influence. We'll send you Tatum and Gigi. We'll send you Izzy Dame, Sol Ruka. We'll send you some people that need a little bit of work, need a little bit more experience. And you can give us Joe Hendry at WrestleMania, and we'll promote your brand that way. Vikingo was on the biggest stage of the world of WrestleMania next to Triple H getting the point salute. He's not even signed to the company. More people heard his name during WrestleMania than ever before. And all these people are complaining about how it's going to damage the indies. It's going to do the exact opposite. It's putting time, money, energy into the indies for the right now. Is it WWE trying to hoard talent or get first dibs? Absolutely. But welcome to war. That's business. I want the best talent loaded up so that when Swipe Right's ready and developed, I'm signing them and they're on NXT. They're already on NXT, right? But Swipe Right will, first off, already said, going to be a generationally great gimmick, right? But when Swipe Right's ready to go main roster, it may be in 2 years, 3 years, 4 years. They're in their early 20s, so they got plenty of time to develop. They're built for WWE. And so I'm gonna put them on an ID deal. We'll give them training. We'll push money, time, resources. Because money is not the only thing that matters. It is the time and the resources and the opportunity and the ability to, right? Because, again, you got people like James and people like who think this is, you know, the indies can do the same thing the WWE. No. You guys romanticize the indies too much. 90% of the people in the indies don't make it because 90% of the people in the indies get bad training. They have zero resources to promote themselves. I always use the example of a dude here locally. Before COVID, I would go to our local shows, PWX, and there was a man on the card on that roster named Cam Carter. I don't know if he still wrestles or not. Cam Carter can do everything Ricochet does, but better, 100% better. Here's the problem. He was never getting noticed. He was never getting tryout offers. And I couldn't understand why. What WWE, now granted, that he's probably a little too old for ID. It looks like they're trying to get the younger, outside of Kylie Rae, like younger talent. But imagine if this system happened back in 2018. And a dude like, go look up Cam Carter if you could. If someone like Cam Carter could get into a developmental system. I don't think he really needed to develop much, but just a place where just the social media presence would be enough for people to know about him, to get behind him. Right? This is an infrastructure. WWE is building a developmental infrastructure that's going to give resources and opportunity and a reach that 90% of the indies won't have. This should make every independent wrestler want to work harder. This is why I respect Vicious Vicky Venuto, who I had on the podcast and the interview a couple months ago, right? Because I see her every day tweeting. She tweets like 5 times a day, good social media idea, right? She promotes herself all the time. I see her a lot talking about, I want to be better. I'm tired of being left behind. I'm working hard. I'm going to be the top, right? It's that should be the mindset of every independent wrestler in the company, on the business. If you're getting into wrestling, you should want to be the best that you can be so that WWE can say, we want you, right? We want to give you an opportunity. That's how I feel, right? So many people romanticize the indies because of people like Matt Cardona who can make great livings off of it. But 90% of independent wrestlers either have second jobs or struggle, live in hotels, live in their cars, struggling. One of my favorite wrestlers at that promotion, PWX, what was his name? he's an insurance agent on the side. I think he's like a health trainer as well. Oh boy, what was his name? Crazy that I don't remember it. I haven't seen him wrestle in like 5 years, so his name doesn't cross my mind, but I'll find it because I want to say it so that y'all know it. this is wasting time. Anyway, but like Drew Adler, that's his name. Drew Adler. One of my favorite wrestlers in PWX. He works as like an insurance agent on the side. Right? You know, he was really good. Right? Him and his partner, I don't even know where his partner went anymore. I kind of miss those days of PWX. I do, I'll be honest with you. Life was much simpler back then. But anyway, yeah, I don't like the idea of romanticizing the indies. It's not an easy lifestyle. And what WWE is trying to do is create a system where if you're the top 3-5% of indie wrestlers and you're young and you're talented and we want you and we think you just need a little bit more development, because a lot of these people go to indie wrestling or on the indies go to cheap wrestling schools. They don't learn good habits, and that's what WWE is trying to stop, right? We're going to get you in touch with the best schools that'll form great habits, get you in our system with the best training. We'll put money and energy and time behind you. We'll give you social media reach. That's what this is all about. That's what this is all about. That's what WWID is for. Everyone's so afraid that WWE is trying to take over the world and buy all the... No. They just want Triple A's in Mexico. They're not going to expand past that. They're not going to go try to get CMLL now. No. They just want a foothold in Mexico so they can get the best Mexican wrestlers, the best Latino, Hispanic wrestlers that come through luchadores and come up through the system, right? Just like with Pro Wrestling Noah, right? Time, money, energy, we can get the best talent in here. Now we got a foothold in Japan. NXT UK was supposed to be a foothold in the UK or in Europe. That's all this is. NXT Africa when it gets created. NXT India when it gets created. NXT Australia when it gets created. NXT Brazil, I could see happening. Or like NXT South America. I could see them putting training centers and all of that in these foreign countries internationally to build a tunnel of talent, a pipeline of talent that when to develop, that doesn't mean all of them will be signed, doesn't mean all of them will turn out to be superstars, but that is how you grow and build the indies. And these places where there's not a lot of opportunity, right? That's where we'll end the show. Thank you for watching. As always, I'm Way Too Deep. No episode on Sunday this week. In fact, I'm actually just, side note, we're ending the Sunday episodes. We'll do Tuesdays and Fridays. It's just a lot of content to prepare. So we'll do Tuesdays and Fridays. And so with that, thank you all for watching. Until next time, I'll see you on the Slap and Meat Wrestling Podcast. So hit that subscribe, come along for the ride. AEW, WWE, we're always on side. From fantasy booking to baddies that slay, Slap and Meat Wrestling every Tuesday.